Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
This podcast exists because of the paid members at DecodingTV.com. Become a paid member and get ad-free episodes and early access to episodes. Thanks to everyone at DecodingTV.com who makes this podcast possible.
We need to scale the Loom's capacity to manage all those new branches. Otherwise, it will fail. And the TVA will be destroyed. And we're all going to die.
There has to be another way.
We can hack into the system.
Really? Oh, that is such a relief.
I'm wondering.
What?
I think you meant it as an idea.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Decoding TV, a podcast about television. I'm David Chen, and I also wish I had a normal human body. Joining me today is Patrick Klepek.
And I'm also frequently scaring my children by turning into a giant clock monster, and everyone's telling me to stop.
Today on Decoding TV, we're going to be discussing Loki Season 2, Episode 3. You can find more episodes of this podcast at podcast.decodingtv.com. Email us at decodingtv@gmail.com. We'll be across all platforms, YouTube, Instagram, TikTok, etc., as at Decoding TV. Before we get to this next episode, Patrick, I did want to give a quick shout out to an email we received from someone at decodingtv@gmail.com. Elliot wrote into decodingtv@gmail.com to refer to our comments about last week's episode of Loki. Now, I think you and I were fair. I was pretty down on last week's episode of Loki, and you were a little bit more positive than me, but you agreed with many of my criticisms. One of the big developments that happened last week was that Kate Dickey, a.k.a. General Dox, decides to annihilate a bunch of variant timelines, right? Variant branched timelines. Theoretically exterminating what I would guess are billions of people. And we criticized how that was not really well set up, and therefore it felt like it came out of nowhere and we couldn't really invest. Elliot wrote into decodingtv@gmail.com saying, "You guys were so right about there being no emotional impact during the pruning scene, and it's most upsetting because of how easy something like that is to fix." Elliot then describes like a couple of examples of things you could use to give people emotional investment. You could have someone at the TVA talking about how they're looking forward to getting back to their timeline, or anyone at the TVA just describing a timeline and what's going on in some of these other timelines. And so basically it's like, you don't even need budget to do it. Or I guess you need budget to like shoot a dialogue scene, but you know what I'm saying? You don't need like visual effects or anything like that. You can just have people having a conversation about, hey, this timeline is important because of this, or this timeline is notable because of this, but they didn't do any of that. And, I think it is part of this tendency I think the show has, which continues into this episode, of taking an idea and being like, isn't this a cool idea? Let's do that idea. But then not really thinking through the implications of that or what it would be necessary, to execute that idea in a really good way. So we'll talk more about that in today's recap, but I am curious if you just had any thoughts on that email or any thoughts on that, because it's the last time we're going to discuss that subplot. It's not mentioned in this week's episode.
Yeah, I think that not a great shock there. That was definitely one of our concerns. I think it certainly speaks to some of my concerns about where the MCU is going, where it kind of felt like it was inevitably going, where a lot of these comic stories inevitably go, which is the next crisis has to top the previous crisis.
Yeah.
And it can't just be Earth. Then it's got to be the galaxy. And then it can't be the galaxy. It's got to be the universe. And it can't just be the universe. It's got to be the multiverse. And at a certain point, it becomes incredibly difficult to create grounded stakes. Once the actual like scale of, obviously we're involving all sorts of different sort of like species and things like that, but like, let's just say humanity, for lack of a better term, like characters we can be grounded with and feel for. It just becomes harder and harder when the scale of that gets so much bigger. And there are ways to bring you down to that. And I think this letter and the way we criticized this scene were ways of doing that. Like, I don't expect to feel the same way I did at the beginning of Endgame, where like, I know Hawkeye, I know his family, like I have established like feelings for like these characters in this scene and when something awful happens to them. But there was an opportunity to give us a sense of those stakes. And we do have characters who in this season are grappling with, what was my life like? What was taken from me? And then you have a scene where you could have set up and now it's gone. That life that I was taken from me, that I could have gone back to, that I could have been a part of, is now pruned. It is now permanently removed from the timeline. And that, I think, like, especially given what's happening with Sylvie in this season, which is clearly the, like, going to be her emotional arc through season two, like as far as we know it so far, is about what does it mean to find a home and like a home that maybe you didn't know you have. And now I don't think the whole season is going to take that idea, which I think would be like the most interesting exploration of a theme for the season as a whole. But I think that the person writing it is absolutely correct and is on the same wavelength as you and I, in which, yes, like broadly, I'm upset or concerned that the scale of the crisis has to get so big. But even when you get there, there are just missed opportunities. And that I'm worried that's going to be a lot of how we look at Loki season two is disappointment less through the kind of disappointment we talked about with some of these other high profile properties and franchises that you and I have discussed for the last couple of months, and more because of our like raised expectations for what Loki could be. Yeah. Is just looking at season two with, you know, feeling like a whiff, like, ah, like this was an opportunity to do something very different. And you were just pointed in the completely wrong direction the whole time.
I would argue my standard is not even that high. You're saying this is an opportunity to do something very different. I'm saying this is an opportunity to do something, to have an idea and follow through on it. And I think in the case of like episode two and the idea of like all these branches being annihilated, it's a situation where maybe that is that's the arc of the season, is you're trying to stop that from happening. And that way mm-hmm. we actually get some kind of build up and tension around that. The episodes have felt very discombobulating. I have to say, like each of the three episodes we've watched at this point, we got some commentary on our YouTube at youtube.com/decodingTV also saying like the beginning of episode two felt designed to make you feel like you had missed an episode, right? Mm-hmm. And it's like, I don't think episode three is like that, but it is vastly different in terms of its structure. It has completely different characters. We're meant to kind of connect with a whole different, basically, protagonist in this episode. So I'm having a lot of doubts about whether they're going to tie everything together satisfyingly. And so it's less about, can you do something different? Just have an idea and follow through on that idea, as opposed to, we have a new idea each week and let's see what that might be, you know? So feel free to keep those emails coming into decodingtv@gmail.com. We'd love to hear what you think of the show. Patrick Klepek, let's start by talking about our overall thoughts on Loki season 2, episode 3. And then we're going to do a detailed recap, spoil everything, talk about some specific scenes. So overall, Patrick, what did you think of this episode?
Well, one thing that you and I were wondering was, where's Jonathan Majors? We know the reason that for an expensive show, they didn't go back and do something perhaps understandable, like reshoot it, is because, well, it seems like he's pretty critical to the story they're telling here. And the answer in season three is, yeah, like he's about to become the main character.
Season two, I think you mean.
Season two, yes. And episode three, like it makes very clear that Jonathan Majors isn't going anywhere in the show and is probably someone who is going to be very present in most, if not all, scenes through the rest of the series. And so, you know, it's so tough. You're finally forced to like truly then start confronting, like, I think a lot of the fears that folks like myself, they're looking forward to this season, and that like we're waiting with bated breath about once the accusations and allegations towards Jonathan Majors came out. What am I supposed to do with those feelings? How am I supposed to untangle that from an actor who is capable of giving extremely powerful and interesting performances? And I don't know how powerful this performance is in this episode, but it's certainly interesting. It is definitely a demonstration of Majors Well, he's trying something. I don't
Choices were made. Decisions were made.
I don't know how well it works for me. And like that's where I end up like feeling just very messy on this episode. Like it's a big swing. It makes me like if I try to detach myself, like a little more interested in where the season is going. But I find it very difficult to untangle my like external thoughts on this actor and the actions they've taken in the real world because there's just no way to avoid them here. They are front and center and the centerpiece of it. And, but like as a episode, I mean, holy shit. Like it seems like we're on a lot of sets. Like the costuming is great. Like the set design is fantastic. Like there's people everywhere. Like, I mean, it's like, I don't know. I found a lot of that like genuinely thrilling and fun and interesting. We get lots of great beats with Mobius and Loki just hanging out, like some of the strongest parts of the show. Like the show recognizes, hey, even in an episode where like Kang, oh, here comes Kang, you know, or however, you know, the show is going to handle this particular version of him. We're still going to give lots of comedic, quiet moments to these characters. And I think that's to the show's benefit. But yeah, definitely one that I come out of with really mixed feelings, even though I find myself at least a little more interested in where the central arc of the show is going from here.
Definitely a messy episode. But let me start by talking about some of the positive aspects, which you brought up already. First of all, this episode looks like it cost, I'm going to estimate, $30 to $40 million.
I feel like you're seeing a lot of the budget of the show in this specific episode.
And like they bring, you know, 1800s Chicago to life in a really vibrant, vivid way that is like genuinely impressive from a production design standpoint. And, you know, every component of production comes together in a really amazing way. Like the sets, the murals on the walls, the number of extras and background artists, the costuming, like everything is just coalescing in a way to make it feel like, oh, this episode oozes money. The fact that they redid the Marvel intro with the old-timey
piano. That was like, great.
Awesome, right? You also point out how there's some parts with like Tom Hiddleston and Owen Wilson hanging out. By far the strongest points of the whole show. I wish like there would just be more of that. You don't need... But then, again, same thing freaking happens as last week, where it's like, I'm enjoying these guys kind of going on a little adventure. They're dressed impeccably. They look awesome, right? And they're...
Yeah.
I could not pull off those outfits, but
I wish
I could because they look amazing in them. And so, so I love their vibe and their rapport. It's just they got great chemistry, and that's like rare to see on anything. When you have it, you want to use it, you want to see it as often as possible. But then, of course, it's interrupted by all these plot machinations, some of which are fairly nonsensical. So. So those are some of the great things about the episode. It's like, looks amazing. We get some more Mobius and Loki time. Awesome, awesome, awesome. The weak elements of the episode are virtually everything else. I think the Jonathan Majors, Victor Timely is like a fairly disastrous portrayal is what I would say. I think it's very mannered and he's clearly going for it. And I honestly thought there was going to be a moment where it was revealed that his whole, the way he speaks is a put on, like, because he is,
I kept waiting for that. As well. The whole point is that he's a con man.
He's a con man. So it's like, I'm thinking like, oh, that's not actually the way he speaks. But I think it's difficult for me to, the reason why it doesn't work is not because somebody's speaking at a different cadence. It's because it's difficult for me to see this as anything other than Jonathan Majors, you know, putting on these mannerisms and this cadence, right? Like I could never lose myself in seeing just an actor, like just a character. I saw an actor talking in a specific way, playing a specific character, as opposed to just he's vanished into the role. And that was distracting for me. But again, I just want to clarify, it's not because he speaks slowly or has a specific cadence. It's just like the performance itself. And then the problem I have with this show is most of many of the times you don't know why characters are doing what they're doing. Like, why is so-and-so doing this thing? specifically the character in question is Ravonna Renslayer in this case, right? Like, why is she taking the actions she's taking in this episode? And concealing the reasons can be interesting, dramatically effective. But I think the show does it too often to the point where it's difficult to even understand. And by the way, the motivations of Ravonna Renslayer were revealed to us, but can we take them at face value? Like, is she lying? Like, I can't even trust that, like, what was revealed is actually true. So,
well, especially because, not to get too far ahead of ourselves, but in your broad criticism of this for the first season, especially, is the end of an episode and then we don't get the but we get the tease for an
in the future
may reveal reasons for previous actions, but in a way that does not feel satisfying to the viewer. It is more satisfying from, like, I'm in a writer's room and, like, oh, that'll be clever. Like,
exactly. Maybe at some point we'll get an explanation for why Ravonna is doing what she's doing, but it's like, it doesn't make for a particularly satisfying experience in the short term. And it would be fine if the show did that with, like, one character, but it seems to do that with everyone, or many of the characters. And I think that's the real problem, is it continuously prizes surprising people versus telling an engaging story in and of itself. So those problems from the second episode, I think, continue in this episode. But we'll see how it shapes up. There's still enough, like, cool things to look at that it's, like, worth checking out the show.
Yeah,
but so far,
juggling so many arcs.
Yeah,
I
so
mean,
far it's very, again, very jumbled from a storytelling perspective. So, anyway, those are some overall thoughts on season 2, episode 3.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
All right, Patrick Klepek, let's get to our thoughts on what actually happened. We're not going to spoil everything that happened in season 2, episode 3. We open in 1868 Chicago within the sacred timeline as Ravonna Renslayer, the first time we've seen her this season in the flesh, by the way, tasked by the TVA's rogue AI Miss Minutes to track down a variant of He Who Remains. Miss Minutes claims she was told by He Who Remains to have Renslayer to place a special book, a TVA manual, in the window of a young Kang variant, ensuring he'll rise to power. Renslayer is promised that she'll be rewarded. Let's pause here for a minute. There was a scene in Family Guy a long time ago. It was just like, you know how Family Guy has lots of, like, offhanded references? And I just remember there was a moment, it was like, I don't remember exactly what the reference was, but it was kind of like they cut to people watching the TV show Family Guy at some point, right? Like, in the show Family Guy, they cut to people watching Family Guy. And somebody was like, so what? Does a family, like, hear the dog speaking? You know, can they hear the baby? Like, is that how that works? That's kind of how I feel about Miss Minutes. I'm like, so, like, does she occupy, like, physical space? I guess people can see her, but she can't actually touch anything. You know, like, I'm trying to figure out, like, what the rules are with Miss Minutes, which, by the way, in my opinion, have been very poorly established. Am I wrong about this, Patrick?
I think poorly established is actually a charitable way of of interpreting the word established. Yes. I mean, Miss Minutes, like, now that she has become, like, a formal character with motivations,
yes,
very... we'll get into her motivations later in the episode, but I think, you know, if you're going to forward her as not just a like a plot device, but actually like a motivating character for the actions of so many things that are occurring in the show. It is then kind of incumbent on you to establish or like, how does Miss Minutes work? Like, how do I think of her as a, like, because in the first season, it's mostly like, this is just cute. It's a fun performance. Like, it's a really neat like mashup of aesthetic. And then, okay, sure. Makes sense here in the TVA. She'd have access to everything. Like, I buy it. Like, I don't need it explained to me. It fits enough of the logic of the world around me. But once we've started going into the timelines and into the quote real world, I'm with you. Like, is she messing with perception? Like, is she actually black and white? and even that then mashes up with, and this is like speaks to how complicated and convoluted like the MCU is getting. It's like, wait. Okay, so if I've watched like Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania, and I saw like the post-credits scene with like all the Kangs, like the whole thing here is that Kang is inevitable, right? Like, the reason like it's bad that He Who Remains was killed and all these branches aren't being pruned and these variants aren't being pruned is because we'll just come back no matter what. But in this case, Miss Minutes is bringing him back. Like, would this person become Kang if like this manual wasn't here? So like, that's not inevitable. That's you messing. And so you're just, maybe that'll be explained later on. And it'll, yeah. You know, my guess is that Miss Minutes is like purposely like futzing with the timeline to her own ends. And Kang is nonetheless inevitable. And that'll be something that happens with, you know, Victor Timely over the course of the season. But I don't know, like, once you start thinking about all of that, which the show is not forwarding, but it's there in the background, like, if it starts to, I'm plenty fine with accepting goofy things at face value if it feels right. But increasingly, especially when like the plotting isn't working as well, the characters aren't working as well, your brain starts to then process those other things. Like, yeah, but what if that's not working? Like, why are we doing this? And I think that's how stories that exist and like this level of high fantasy and suspension of disbelief start to buckle under themselves. And that's how rules can help you. But so far, you know, the show does not seem particularly interested in establishing them.
It's also a situation where the show is obsessed with plot mechanics, and constantly you have people like Ki-Hui Kwan shouting plot things at the, you know, at the other characters, or the other, if we don't do this to the temporal loom, then this is gonna happen, you know, like it feels like an episode of Star Trek where they're like, if we don't, you know, decouple the power stuff from the blah blah blahs, you know, like they're always like explaining stuff to you. So for them to just not describe Miss Minutes at all, like, I think they just referred to her as like a rogue AI basically.
Yeah.
But it's like, okay, a rogue AI who can take physical form,
right, can turn into a kaiju, could turn scare into a bunch of people.
Okay, anyway.
I mean, it's, you know, to your point, you know, it's, I don't, it just feels like it's constantly sort of like losing its own thread to grasp onto, and I think that becomes very frustrating as the, you know, as the viewer, as it goes on, which I think is reflected in our own impressions of like how this has continued forth.
Agreed. Back at the TVA, OB is panicked over the continued meltdown. Desperate, Loki and Mobius decide to follow Renslayer's Tempest. So the idea is that the temporal loom, because of, I'm going to say, events that occurred in episode one that I'm not even going to bother to rehash here, is like, it can't handle the increase in number of
time threads. It's like Ghostbusters. Like, there's too many ghosts in here.
There's too many ghosts, exactly right. And so they need, but they're like, they can hack into the system if they have the temporal aura of the person that designed the system, which we now know is He Who Remains, right? So Loki and Mobius, they want to get He Who Remains, get them to the TVA. They can use his temporal aura to stop the temporal loom from melting down. That's kind of the motivating incident. Loki and Mobius end up in Chicago in 1893, which also happens to be hosting the World's Fair. The two eventually stumble upon an advertisement for a man named Victor Timely, who claims to be putting on a demonstration for temporal marvels. At the show, the two notice the presence of Renslayer and on stage Victor Timely. This version of He Who Remains, aka Victor Timely, is much younger and has a much different speaking cadence and personality than who we met at the end of the first season. He claims to be developing a way to harness time as a form of energy, and that even time itself is capable of being manipulated. And let's I'll just keep going here. After demonstrating a prototype of a temporal loom, Timely leaves the stage and is cornered by Renslayer, Loki, and Mobius, and a swarm of other parties who want to cash in on Timely's promises. He holds a bidding war for the patents to his work, which turns out to be a massive con. In fact, a lot of what Timely's up to is a con, even if his interest in time is true. Timely's chased into the crowd of the World's Fair when his tricks are discovered, and he stumbles into a Ferris wheel with Loki, where Sylvie appears. She's determined to make good on her promise to kill every variant of He Who Remains, and a war of words and magic powers between Loki and Sylvie results in Timely falling out of the Ferris wheel, only to be discovered by Renslayer, who calls upon Miss Minutes to become a kaiju-sized monster to clear an escape path. So let's pause here and just talk a little bit about what's going on here.
Whew, a lot. You know that when I mentioned in a previous episode that sometimes when I do the recaps, it's like, wow, I'm just like scooting forward in this playback, and like there's not much for me to write up. It's just characters talking.
Yeah,
move on to the next thing.
Not
that whole
episode.
Stretch that you just went through was like, oh shit, there's like 100 things that I need to write down. Okay. And I think it's other than, you know, useful for as a framing device for you and I to talk about the episode. I think when read back to the listener, people listening to this podcast or people watching, you know, in various platforms, I think you get a sense of like what we're talking about, like the difference between like character moments and plotting when you are forced to then summarize it. Because yes, this episode is, you know, 50-ish minutes. Like it's long by a lot of Marvel television show standards. And yet when like laid out what all happens there in about 15-ish minutes is like, why are you putting in this many characters and this many actions tied up in this many, like this few scenes? It's just way too much for the show to, even if it was exquisitely written, which I don't think it is. Like, it's just like anything would buckle under this much weight. It just cannot support this much meaningfully in the time span that it's given and the structure that it's given.
Completely agreed. And excellent job on the recap as usual, Patrick. But let's talk about a few things that happen in this sequence. I mean, there's a few things that I actually really appreciate. First of all, again, just love the two characters, Mobius and Loki, hanging out. I love that they see a representation of Norse mythology.
Oh, that was great.
And it's like Odin, Thor, and Baldur. And Loki's like, why is Baldur there? Like, no one knows who that guy is. Baldur is an MCU character, by the way. And I don't think we've seen him depicted in the MCU, Baldur the Brave. So it's very possible it's a reference to something that will happen sooner. But that's always been one of the things that is amusing to me that the show doesn't really explore, is the difference between what happens with the Norse gods in the world of the MCU and the stories that people on Earth tell about the Norse gods. Like, there's a huge gulf between those things. And the show hasn't really explored that. And it's a nice nod to that when that happened in this episode. I really like the idea, the concept of He Who Remains or Victor Timely as a character. Because Victor Timely, in many ways, is like a tragic figure in the context of this episode. Imagine having the idea for the iPhone, but it's, you know, 500 AD. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, it's like you can't even begin to, there's no electricity, there's no app developer. Like, it's like, that's a tragic thing if somebody was able to think up something like the iPhone, but it's 500 AD. Like,
someone gives you a stock tip, but the stock market doesn't exist. Well, this would make me rich.
Right, exactly.
If there was a way to do anything with this information.
Exactly.
That is like, I think that actually is I think you're right. It's like, if you peel back what the idea is behind that character, like the idea of being handed a golden ticket, but not knowing what to do with it, you know, I mean,
having the ability to really make it happen. Now, I mean, based off of the technology we see in Victor Timely's lab, maybe he will eventually like fulfill it.
He seems to be on the path towards all that little flickering sure seemed awfully temporal loomy.
Right, but as we're introduced to him, it's like, oh, he has this thing that like doesn't necessarily work that well, but you can see it's going to become the temporal loom, you know. How this version of Victor Timely like plugs into everything we've seen remains to be seen. But I like that core idea, and then maybe like the future more successful version of you sent a book back in time so that you could like kickstart your, you know, your time machinations. Like those are cool ideas that I like that this show brings up. And again, we should spend more time on those things instead of we got to zip to the next like action scene or Sylvie and Loki fighting each other again, you know, like that kind of stuff. It's like, okay, yeah, great. Sylvie's here again. You know, Sylvie's awesome. I love the character. I love her and Loki interacting, but like, we didn't know that was, it's again, another thing where it's like, surprise, Sylvie's here, you know, a fight scene.
It's like they use the magic powers as an excuse to like take the chess pieces and like, well, there's no real way to get them here, but like, Thankfully, we have undefined magic powers.
Sylvie's magic. Sylvie
can.
It's like, we need another action scene. Oh, who should do it? Sylvie. Well, how's she getting there? She just gets there. You know, like it's
the green stuff. Don't worry about it.
You know, so it's like, yeah, okay. You know, it's not bad. It's not like an incompetently shot scene or anything like that. It's like perfectly solid, but it's just, as with the final sequence in the last episode, like no setup. You know, she just kind of comes in out of nowhere. She does play a significant role in the rest of the episode. But I wish, you know, the stuff that the show brings up is what I'm trying to say is it's genuinely interesting material. Anything else? Oh, I do also want to give a shout out to the fact that I think we saw a clip from this scene in one of the post-credit scenes of Quantumania. Am I right about that?
Correct. Yes. Like basically them arriving at the showcase for the Temporal Marvels.
I think it was already going on, if I recall correctly, when in the scene. So what I appreciated, I'm just going to say, you know, I'm part of the problem, Patrick. I was like, hey, that's the scene from the thing. Because because when you see that scene in Quantumania, like, so there's a scene of Mobius and Loki watching Victor Timely. Like, that's the post-credit scene.
Mm-hmm.
And when I first saw it, I was like, what is even going on? Like, at the end of Loki season one, Mobius and Loki don't even know each other. So, like, how is the show going to deal with that? Why are they back in time? And why is there an 19th century version of Kang there? Like, what's going on? And it's cool to just kind of have all those questions kind of answered, at least partially, with this episode of the show. So those are some like shout outs, some big ups I want to give to this episode and this sequence in particular. Patrick Klepek, any thoughts about, you know, World's Fair Chicago 1893?
Well, it's always nice as someone that I never tell people that know Illinois geography or have any familiarity with Chicago that I'm from Chicago, because I'm not. I'm from the northwest suburbs of Chicago. Those are different things. But I'll tell someone that doesn't know anything about Chicago, like, oh yeah, I'm from Chicago, because what am I going to say?
Right.
From the north, like the northwest. So, but it's always nice. Chicago never gets depicted in, it's in like gangster media. Like, that's about it. It's rarely in video games. Like, Chicago, despite having some really iconic skylines,
right,
and architecture and looks, is rarely seen in a lot of the stuff I watch. It's always New York and it's always LA, or it's Vancouver, or like being New York or LA or something like that. And so it's a small thing, but it's always nice for like the city that means the most to me, because it's the one I live in closest proximity to, the one I spend the most time in personally. It may not be modern day Chicago, but it is cool to see a version of Chicago here.
It is hilarious that you're praising the show Chicago depiction, which depends zero on modern day Chicago being filmed in any way.
These are called scraps, David, and I'm taking them and I'm putting them in my mouth and I'm chewing on them.
What I will say is, it's just amazing to see a show depict any part of America from the 1800s.
Yeah.
Like, it's just like, hey, this takes a bunch of ambition and work, like, you know, below the line work to get it done. And I thought they did a wonderful job. They seemed to build what appeared to be a functional Ferris wheel. You know, like, I don't think it was, but like,
no, but it at least felt like it. It hits on the version of the show that doesn't exist. And we talked about, like, what if this show was just Sliders? And it's like, how cool would it be that, like, every episode opens and then walking out of a time portal and just, like, what, like, fabulous costumes are they wearing this time to, like, blend into the scene they're in? And I now worry, I worry desperately that, like, that part of the show is more or less over. And we're about to spend a lot of time
back at the TVA, probably.
Back at the TVA with like sad, not yet Kang, grappling with becoming Kang.
Sad, and, not yet Kang.
And
the
I'd
worst
rather
kind
see,
of Kang. Sad, not just, yet Kang.
The worst variant of them all. Just emo Kang, just trying to, listening to Fall Out Boy and working through his feelings. But I just, it's a different type of show. It's one that's maybe less dour, but I just would have been so fun to see those two actors be like, oh, you know, kind of like Back to the Future, right? Like, oh, yeah, we're off to the Wild West, and like, here's the get-ups that they're wearing. Like, how much fun would that be? Just siding, and even then, like, not even involving Kang. They're just solving time travel crimes.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
Oh, something's going on in this. We got a ping from this, you know, branch. Yeah. Like, time to go figure it out.
They should have really conceived this as a Law and Order procedural style show, right?
Law and Order TVA unit, please. Like, that is really what I was looking for.
There is a really cool shot in this episode of Loki where they walk through one portal in, like, earlier Chicago and then enter the World's Fair in Chicago. That was an incredible shot. Like, I love showing how the portals work and all that stuff. So big shout out to that. All right. Back at Timely's home, he shows off some of his experiments and tries to understand why so many people are suddenly interested in him. Renslayer and Miss Minutes do their best to explain the concept of time travel variants and his eventual destiny. The group is quickly interrupted by folks who were previously seeking Timely, and the three smuggle aboard a nearby boat in search of Timely's lab. On the boat, Timely reveals how the TVA manual changed his life and discovers Renslayer is the one who delivered it. The two seem to share a moment, only for Timely to unexpectedly detach a lifeboat and join forces with Miss Minutes, leaving Renslayer behind. Okay. Here's where the problems of the episode really started to seep in for me. Is like, what is Renslayer's motivation this episode? Right? Why is she doing what she's doing? It's, first of all, I'm going to say that her motivations last season were not particularly well explained. She like went off in search of free will, and it's like, oh, okay, well, that's sufficiently vague that you could explain that in any way. I sure hope the show clarifies what's going on there this season.
David, my show said my t-shirt says order and chaos. What don't you understand about my personal philosophy?
My I am going to seek free will t-shirt is prompting a lot of questions that are already answered by the shirt. Renslayer is going off in search of free will, and like she's like disenchanted by the TVA or whatever the heck. And I was like, okay, that's not very well done plot line from last season, but like maybe we'll get better explanation this season. Okay. We don't yet. And I did appreciate that the show acknowledged that, because Renslayer is like, okay, I got to get you back to the TVA. We got to get you to stop the temporal loom. I'm like, I'm watching this. I'm like, first of all, I didn't even know Renslayer gave a shit. Like, even A, right, knew about the temporal loom problems. B, would give a shit. And then Victor Timely then asks, I have never felt more simpatico with Victor Timely than at that moment, because he says, well, isn't that what those other guys were doing? Like, he's like, isn't that what
the Green Wizard,
wanted?
Amazing
moment where he's like, yeah, and his butler, you know, like the wizard butler, and his butler, yeah, isn't that what those guys are doing? And I'm like, yeah, Ravana, isn't that what they were doing? Like, if you guys have the same motivation. And he's like, why aren't you guys joining forces? And she's like, well, I don't trust them. And it's like, okay, I guess.
That's not sufficient. Like, that feels like the show really straining to produce a tension between characters that is like, really, it doesn't.
Right. I mean maybe we're going to get some explanation later on for like why, like maybe Ravana, that's not even Ravana's mission. Maybe she's doing something else.
Right. Right.
I hope so. But the problem is this episode, it makes no sense. Like, it's just like, okay, I guess you don't trust them. Like, it really, what would their ulterior motives be? Anyway, okay.
Even Mobius points that out. They have that like one brief scene while the fight's happening on the Ferris wheel. And he's like, what?
What are we doing here?
What are we doing here? And like, there's no, you know, like part, Like villain monologues can, you know, take them or leave them, like some are better than others, but at least like, it's a statement of philosophy of like what you intend to do. And here, I feel like I worry that it's going to confirm your previous suspicions that so much of it is contingent. Like, it's information in later episodes will backfill why things are occurring here in a way that makes things in the moment feel deeply unsatisfying. And I don't think necessarily will make those previous moments feel better. They might make more logical sense, but it doesn't necessarily make them feel better in the moment. And
at this point, what you just said is a best case scenario. Like that's, that's if we even get an explanation in the future episodes, right? I hope we do. To be fair, later on, Owen Wilson does come in and say like, is this really what free will looks like? And it's like, I didn't understand what it was before and I don't understand what the concept is now, you know? So anyway, speaking of motivations that are not very well set up.
Well, one small thing before get to that. I will say, I don't know, you know, the regional background of the people who wrote this episode, single writer, multiple writers, writer's room, whatever the case may be. But there is a essentially throwaway line when Victor Timely is exiting out of his laboratory and mentions that he has a laboratory in Wisconsin. And then as he's shooting out, says something to the effect of like, well, it's lower taxes. And David, I cannot emphasize to you how much discourse there is between Wisconsin and Illinois residents over the discrepancies on taxing. The two states could not have, like, Illinois is a like blue state surrounded by deeply red states like Wisconsin, Indiana. Mm-hmm. And the tax thing is like, it feels like it was written by somebody who lives in Illinois. And it's like those fucking Wisconsinites like are always going on about like the taxes down here in Chicago. And so it just, it cracked me out because like that's such a specific regional joke to make that I feel like it only could have made it all the way through writing and production because somebody was like, no, this is going to make a lot of sense to people who are from the area. Like it's going to land, like it's going to land. And I'm here to tell you it did.
Boy, it did. This is how you can make Patrick Klepek feel seen as a Chicagoite. Is A, depict any rendition of Chicago. It can literally be a bunch of shacks from 200 years ago.
And just a sign that says Chi-Town. And like, I got
and
you, buddy.
And also make somewhat accurate statements about Chicago's tax code as compared to Wisconsin's.
That's what I'm asking for.
All Patrick wants.
Look, as a longtime white guy, David, like I'm getting it in all sorts of other ways, and so I got to like go down like the ladder. Like, what
this
are
is like
other
fifth
ways?
Fifth order representation. Like, right.
I'm already seen in all the movies and TV shows, so now I'm thinking about like regional tax issues and how can I have that represented in the media that I consume. So yeah. I appreciate you calling it out.
You're welcome. At Timely's lab, he's anxious to head to the TVA before Miss Minutes reveals her actual plan. Frustrated at eons at He Who Remains side, but stuck in a cartoonish costume? Question mark?
Yeah.
She wants a body. Not only that, she wants to be his love interest. Timely fumbles with a temp pad and sends Miss Minutes away, only to be interrupted by Renslayer. Moments later, Renslayer is interrupted by Loki and Mobius, as Renslayer rants about order and chaos. Soon, this is interrupted by Sylvie, who spares Timely's life after he swears he is not He Who Remains and intends to help. Left alone with Renslayer, Sylvie nearly makes good on a long desire to kill her as well, but instead sends her to the end of time with the rotting remains of He Who Remains. As the episode closes, Miss Minutes claims to know a terrible secret about Renslayer's past. So that's what happens at the end of the episode. I don't think there's a post-credit sequence from what I can recall. So, okay, so, the question of what Miss Minutes is, you know, as you said, Patrick, it's like, oh, yeah, sure, whatever. Rogue AI, I'm willing to forgive that. She's a cartoon that can actually occupy three-dimensional space? Whatevs. That's fine. Who cares? But then you, show, are making me think critically about what's actually going on here by, like, I want a human body. And it's like, what? Like, is she, like, she has motivations? What is even the origin of Miss Minutes? And, like, obviously she was someone who was created by He Who Remains, I think, is the question. And, like, became sentient over time. But it feels like a major thing to introduce in, like, 2 minutes. And then, like, you know. Maybe it will be one of the long-running animating questions of the show, but so far I find it to be a little bit confusing. What do you think, Patrick Leather?
No, I'm with you, and I grow concerned further with there are allusions to it in some lines of dialogue from Renslayer when Mobius and Loki interrupt that are along the lines of like, I've been doing this like thanklessly for eons. And it seems to be setting up. I don't think Renslayer is romantically interested in He Who Remains, although there are allusions to that in the boat scene. And boy, I don't know how I feel about setting up like a three-way romance, like scorned lovers plot line. Like that wasn't on my bingo card. Not something I needed explored. Does not give potentially, like, I don't know how Ms. Minutes identifies, but like two like women who's like primary animating motivation or like big motivation is they're pissed off at this dude who doesn't care about them enough. Like that's. Super low hanging fruit and deeply uninteresting in a store in a setting that can do anything and whose characters should have. Well, for one, I just don't need Ms. Minutes to have a motivation. I just really don't like you. Just be the he who like what she was saying in the beginning of the episode of like, yeah, he gave me like instructions. Like that makes sense. Seems like the kind of guy who left instructions behind for like how to do things in the timeline were I to die. But no, like she's also got to be bitter and jealous and need a body. Like, and again, it's if you start outlining all the things that need to be resolved this season in a yes, as we discussed at the top of discussing this season, I think it was the top or episode two about how Marvel is potentially embracing series and having the kind of television that could, it's more of a guarantee that there'll be, if it's liked, that there'll be arcs that are going over season one, two, three, as opposed to a one and done mini movie that's chopped up into six episodes. I don't know if there's Loki season three. Like, I don't know where Marvel is in plotting this stuff out. And so I can only look at this as, oh, it's so nice that we did get a season two, but it's probably still broadly a limited series. And these changes in their production pipeline can't happen at the drop of a hat. So I need to then on faith believe these are going to be resolved in the next three episodes. And even though those episodes are an hour-ish long, there is just no way to do satisfying justice to all of this. And that's putting aside my like basic problems with these as character motivations. And so it's just kind of a bummer place to be. Because now Victor Timely is essentially like he also has like a really important arc that needs to resolve in the next three episodes. Like Sylvie has essentially been ignored. Like the animating factor of the previous season, the reason there was a season two, those characters are increasingly seeming like they're going to be sidelined in favor of, well, I hope emo Kang, you know, feels okay by the end of this. That's just it's a frustrating place to be, even if we predicted that it was going to head in a direction like this.
Let's see. You know, let's see. The show may still have a couple tricks up its sleeve. I do think that scene in the where Victor Timely's begging for his life is like one of the most. That was when the performance really worked for me, and also like the idea is really interesting, and we've seen this many times before. Terminator 2. Miles Dyson, you know, he's like this guy who's Sarah Connor is like, you're going to kill humanity. You're responsible for a billion deaths. And he's like, that's not who I am. You know, like, and can people change who they are? Can people change their fate? You know? And in the case of Sylvie, it's like Sylvie holds Victor Timely responsible for all the terrible things that have happened to her. Right. Like her whole life was ripped from her. And so he's like, yeah, that's not me. That's not, you know, the idea. Can you overcome who you really are? Can we overcome fate? Those are interesting questions. And I needed to think about those questions at the same time. I was thinking, does Ms. Minutes just want to have a sexy body? You know, like is that a thing that I need to be spending my time thinking about? There's good, interesting time travel stuff in the show.
Absolutely.
And it's mixed in with a bunch of plotting about stuff that like I think we care less about, basically.
Yeah, it's just overstuffed. It is overstuffed, and I think it's easy to imagine a lot of this being the result of how like Marvel has done television shows, right? Like I've not been in the writer's room for a television series, but I have to imagine part of that is imagining, okay, what do we want to accomplish this season? And then what could be, you know, we've talked about like pulling on the dangling threads for further seasons. If you have no guarantee of that, I can imagine as a writer, the temptation being like, well, let's get it all in here. Because if there's no guarantee of a season three, of a season four, like there are like four or five seasons of plot threads, like in these, in this season alone. And like, they're all going to be given, they're all going to essentially function on, can these, what is broadly like an array of really incredible actors, can they sell us on a season's worth of development in like a couple of scenes? Because there's just not time to grant them all those moments.
We've basically been speed running like a season's worth of plot in an episode of each show. And like characters come in and like are introduced and then like we don't see them for a whole episode.
Timely could be the cliffhanger of Loki season two. You know what I mean? Where it's like they spend all their time like dealing with like traveling, tracking these people down, dealing with like problems on branched parts of the timeline. And then at the end, oh shit, we finally stumbled into like He Who Remains. And like, ah, like let's see where this goes in season three. And it's just instead it's you're right. You get an entire season's worth of plot in a single episode.
I'm so curious at like what the vision was, because you have we had the Rafael Casal character. It had a whole arc last episode. We had billions of people being apparently exterminated last episode. We're never gonna we didn't. Maybe we're gonna return to it next episode. So like I want to give the show credit for that, but or give the show that benefit of the doubt. But it's like, it's odd to just drop these major things like Rafael Casal as Brad and all these billions of people dying, and then like just go on to a different thing next episode. We're just on to a different thing. Now again, maybe they'll come back to it, but so far it does feel like what you said. They put 35 ideas on the whiteboard and they're like, these are the things we could do in Loki season two, and someone just came in and said, Kevin Feige came in and was like, we're doing all of them. We're doing them all.
And any show is just going to strain trying to accomplish all those things. It doesn't matter how clever the production design is. Doesn't matter how clever the quips are. Doesn't matter how talented the actors are. You just run out of room. And it feels like this is a show that is funnily enough, for a show about like rapidly expanding branches that it can't like, and it might like struggle to contain that and explode. It feels like the show is often dealing with that as well.
Yes. The show's biggest problem is it can't be contained by the plot loom of the show itself. Nailed it. Okay. Anyway.
All right, well, we're not going to be on the writing staff for season three. that's out the window.
We are persona non grata. Okay. Well, you can find more episodes of this podcast at podcast.decodingtv.com. Email us at decodingtv@gmail.com. Find us across all platforms at Decoding TV. Find Patrick Klepek at crossplay.news. Check out his podcast, Remap Radio, wherever podcasts can be downloaded. Patrick, I am, the show is still really interesting to watch. Like, there's still cool stuff to look at each week, but man, it has been a really up and down first half of the season, and we're already halfway through the show. You know, like, I'm curious, like, you said there's no way it can tie everything up, and it's like, well, maybe, like, it's possible.
I'm hoping. My expectations are, my disappointment comes from a place of having higher expectations and being frustrated by a show that I wanted to match my feelings on the first. I think like that is nowhere best expressed than like this first season was appointment viewing for me and my wife. And sometimes she's like, oh, well, I guess we can watch that at the end of the weekend.
Wow. Oh, ooh.
Damn, low-key.
Cold.
That's bad. Like, that's bad.
When she like goes to the bathroom and you're like, oh, I'll pause it. And she's like, no, you don't have to. Like,
there's a little bit of those vibes. I hate to say it. And she like, Tom Hiddleston is like top five crushes for her. Mm-hmm. And so does not usually want to miss
he's like a hall pass celebrity for her.
I
wasn't joking. But he's
nor
not
is
a,
she, nor is she,
but she can't even be bothered to, pause the thing while she's in the bathroom. Anyway. So I think we'll know, Patrick, we'll know a lot more at the end of next episode.
I agree.
Whether this thing's going to finish the swing. Because next episode is either going to be a completely brand new set of plots, or it's going to start tying up some of the plots that have already been introduced. And if the latter, then I actually think there's some hope that this is going to mean something by the end. So we will see. Find out with us next week right here on Decoding TV. Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you next week. Goodbye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.